She said, get out the chat room and clean my
bed. Stretch, feeling fine, so fresh.
The Glad Girl Group coming at you with a throwback jam. That was Glad Force Flex Drawstring Trash Bags featuring Pine Sol Original Scent. And that's better than all good. It's all Glad.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Hello and welcome to On the Corner, the official podcast of PitcherList.com. I'm your host, Eric Smolski, joined, as always, by my co-host on this Memorial Day weekend. It's Nick Pollock. Nick.
What is happening?
How'd you enjoy your long weekend?
I mean, there is no holiday. It's baseball season. There is no off season.
Sure.
We don't get this stuff. No, actually, today I did the list. I thought about it, you know, previous years. Mondays is like Labor Day. It has been July 4th before. It's obviously Memorial Day. I like doing the list anyway on those days because it just ruins the whole week if you don't have it on Monday. So you guys benefited. You got the thing. You got OTC. You got the list. Like, it's a normal week. And hope you had a great holiday.
I hope people were able to watch a lot of the day baseball. It's harder with when the kid's not at school. So then you're like, oh, I'll watch an hour. I watched a little bit of the Red Sox game during the nap, but then I don't get the baseball during the day as much. Mm. That's okay. You know,
right.
We get through it. We're here to talk about it at night, and that's going to be just a lovely thing. So our theme for today, it's going to be dishes you order when you go out for dinner.
Dishes I order when I go out for dinner. Okay.
Yeah, so dine out options.
Because
they're the stud ones, right? They're the ones where you're like, I need this. There's the high risk options, things that look good on the menu, but it might be a total disaster.
Sure.
There's the old standbys. The like, listen, a brick chicken. It's not exciting, but I know it's going to taste good. And so we're going to roll with that.
Fantastic. I'm in. Let's do this.
I'm a little upset, by the way, that after my killer, we're having a fire sale. Name of last week's list. You now have Chris Sale as the top of your list.
Yeah, I know. I did this for you.
I had to come up with another sale.
Yeah, you did.
Title. Yeah.
Yeah, and what do you got?
I came up with we're having a sale of a good time.
So you're gonna do the same picture twice.
Yeah. I had to. Well, because he's the title of your list now. So
I know, but it was in Monaga last week and you decided to do fire sale.
Yeah. Well, now I'm trying to get back on your page.
Look, guys, Eric is the one that was super in on Chris Sale in the preseason. That's all the only reason why he's doing this. Okay. And understandably so. He was really into Chris Sale. He convinced me to bring him up a little bit in my rankings, but clearly not enough. And it's a good moment. It's a good moment that of all the injured pitchers, Chris Sale is not one of them and is doing all the things we want him to do.
Yes, I had him third in the no, I didn't. But you know, it's a interesting. We'll get right into the top tier, and there's some guys in here where you're like, oh, that guy's still healthy, and they're healthy and pitching great, and that's the beauty of the season right now. That's why, again, as we'll go through when we talk about this list, we try not to extrapolate out 6 weeks from now. That's why Nick got so mad at me when I asked that Luis Garrett Cole question last week, because who knows? 4 weeks, 5 weeks, 6 weeks. It's a long way from here.
It absolutely is. And don't you dare ask that question again.
I won't, but I might ask it in like 5 weeks. We'll see what happens.
No, we're good.
So we start with tier number one. And a new number one. It's Zach Wheeler. Number two, Tyler Glasnow. Number three, Chris Sale. Number four, Corbin Burns. Number five, Luis Castillo. Number six, Tarek Skubal. Number seven, Shota Imanaga. Number eight, Cole Reagans. Number nine, Yoshinobu Yamamoto. Number 10, Jared Jones, and number 11, Max Fried. What's this tier called? Why is it called that?
I mean, this is the burger, right? This is just every place has that burger. Like, all right, fine. Like, I'm not, you know, you go to a place and you shouldn't really always go with the burger, especially if it's not a place like that's known for it. But you look through it and you go, you know what? These things just aren't doing it. You go with the burger. It's always there for you.
I was listening to a non-baseball related podcast, but it's one of my go-to podcasts. Mm-hmm. And the hosts are both dudes over 40. And they were just like, I hit a point in my life where they're like, the burger is no longer exciting to me. I feel terrible after I eat an entire hamburger. And I was just like, I'm not there yet. Like, I just, it would be, it's a death row meal for me. Like, just give me a really good burger. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fantastic. And you just know that, like, it's hard to mess that up completely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and there's many ways to make a great burger, just like there's many ways that these guys have reached into.
There you go.
Tier number one. But explain what prompted you tweeted out that you were going to make the switch to put Wheeler at number one. What was the impetus behind it?
I mean, it's pretty clear. Glasnow was number one and he just didn't do well for 2 weeks, and Wheeler's just always been there for you. Mm-hmm. It's just, I don't know. He's just so good at everything. It's a sub one whip. It's a 2.5 ERA. It's a ton of innings, ton of wins, tons of strikeouts. It's like, you look at all of these, you can see in some ways that some of them are having a hot stretch or so. I don't need to tell you any of the numbers. You just know that Zach Wheeler is just doing Zach Wheeler things, and that's that.
Yeah, it's why we were talking about, you know, him locked into like that SP3 spot or whatever it was at the beginning. Sale is up to three. Huge riser. You mentioned obviously that you felt like he should have been in tier one last week. And so this is just a, you know, we don't know how long it's going to last, but you got to treat him as if he's one of the best starting pitchers in baseball right now while he's pitching like this.
Yeah. If you remember this last week, striker is so high, 59% strikers, third best among all starting pitchers. That means he's throwing strikes and then limiting hard contact. That's absurd. 2.12 ERA, 0.85 whip. He's done everything that you wanted and more. 8-1 record. I can't emphasize that enough. It's so helpful to have Sale on your team pitching for a good ball club that gets you wins, and it's all working well. So the biggest question, of course, you have Wheeler at one, Glasnow at two, Sale at three. You say, Nick, what about injuries? Well, everyone gets hurt. It's really just showcased this year, like all the guys are getting hurt at this point. It's pretty tough for me to weigh anything that there's future injury coming, considering it's almost June 1st. That's a third of the season essentially gone.
Yeah.
That's a huge time to get hurt, which they haven't yet. It's also less time to get hurt in the first place. So I kind of start throwing it out the window at this point, and Sale's killing it.
Yeah. I think, like, if you look at some of the names in this tier with, you know, Sale, Glasnow to a lesser extent, Imanaga, Jared Jones, like, there is a lot of just this, you know, we were talking about when we started doing the rankings in the offseason. Like, nothing is really safe. I mean, there's an illusion of safety, but like, at some point you got to take the guys who just have the talent to do really well when they're on the mound. And that's kind of what you're seeing here, is a lot of guys who maybe were outside of the top 10 or had, you know, that ability, but nobody felt like ranking them because they weren't safe or who knew how healthy they were going to be or whatever. Mm-hmm. And you're just seeing through partial, you know, luck of guys in front of them getting hurt, but also just the fact that they're good, talented pitchers. And, you know, there was a value on waiting and getting some of these guys later in drafts.
Absolutely.
Any of the other names we want to talk about? I mean, the rest are kind of usual suspects here in tier one.
Yeah. I mean, I had Max Fried at the end because the guy has gone 9 innings now twice. And if you need any sort of confirmation to if Max Fried is back and doing good things, I think you've got it by now. So yes, he is a 20% K rate. Absolutely. I see that. But I think a lot of that is due to the first four starts that combined for 12 strikeouts in four games. And after that, it's been a strikeout an inning for the most part. He's just the guy that you want him to be. He's incredibly consistent. And also, I think there's even another tier for Fried to hit as the changeup improves as well.
Fully agree there.
So yeah, so I feel like you have Max Fried and you're not going to think about it again this year.
Love it. Tier two starts with a new name at the top. Number 12, Joe Ryan. Number 13, Aaron Noah. Number 14, Kevin Gossman. Number 15, Kyle Bradish. Number 16, Logan Webb. Number 17, Sonny Gray. Number 18, Zach Gallen. Number 19, Logan Gilbert. And number 20, Freddie Peralta. What's this tier called? Why is it called that?
Look, this isn't, this is going to surprise a lot of people, but it's tap water. Okay?
Okay.
Because that's always the correct answer. You want to do the bottled water or the sparkling? I mean, of course, where you are, it's a little different. I'm thinking about New York City. It's always tap. 100% tap. It's always there for you. It's always glorious. And it doesn't cost as much as everything else in tier one.
Very true. There was a time where they called it the Bloomberg. Do you remember people trying to push that?
No.
Yeah. There was a time where people were trying to push tap water being called a Bloomberg.
Why is that?
I don't know. Maybe he cleaned up the tap, or he took credit for cleaning up the tap water. I lived here my entire life, felt like the tap water was always super drinkable.
No, I mean, there was, you know, Bloomberg did put in the soda tax. So maybe that's why. Soda tax, if you guys don't know, you can't order above like a 32 ounce drink or something like that, essentially, for a soda. Because I mean, I'll be honest with you. Yeah. Soda is a poison. It is so much sugar. Oh my gosh, it destroys us. I stopped actually having soda in 2012, I think it was. I stopped just outright drinking soda. So I understand why he wanted to do that. It's like, look, we pay healthcare costs for people who have diabetes and we have all the soda, so we're going to do that. So another question to be said about other stuff. But anyway, that might be why Bloomberg is water, because it's, you can't get soda.
Apparently, it just turns out that he launched a campaign for people to ditch drinking plastic bottled water and drink tap water because the tap water is so good. And so apparently there are a bunch of ads that I guess neither one of us remember seeing of him.
He's not wrong. Yeah. It's so good here in New York, guys.
Just get a reusable bottle, fill it up.
Just come to New York.
Yeah.
It's the best.
Let's talk. We got to talk about the guy at the top because, you know, we, you and Eno in particular have been on the Joe Ryan train in the weeks leading up to the season, picking up on some of the Arsenal changes and things that he was doing in the spring. And now we're seeing a little velocity boost, which, like, hard to know how sustainable it is, but it's super intriguing. And you bumped him all the way up to 12.
I mean, yeah, it's pretty hilarious. 2021, he shows up throwing 91. 2022, it's 92. 2023, it's 92.5. And early this year is 93.5. Last start, 94.5. And then Monday, it was 95.
Yeah.
And actually, at one point, it was 95.5. He threw the hardest pitch he's ever thrown at 96.6. Oh, my gosh. Joe Ryan, you're doing it. You're doing all the things we want you to do. His home run rate on his fastball is in half as far as home run fly ball rate goes. It's great. It's really just nice, you know, for a guy to have this super flat four seamer doing all the good things that you want to see from it. And he's not allowing the home runs off the sweeper anymore. It's all just wonderful. So props to Joe Ryan, 27% K rate entering today with a 4% walk rate, 0.98 whip. He's doing all the things. It's great.
Yeah. It is. It's really nice to see. Great first half last year, and then some of those changes he made kind of fell apart in the second half. But, you know, we talked about the fact that he's a tinkerer and somebody who is constantly trying to change and get better. And those inconsistencies in the second half then get worked on and improved. And he's been really solid this year.
Absolutely.
I want to talk to you a little bit about if I had to tell you that there's that, who is the pitcher in this tier who makes me the most nervous?
Oh man. So that's Nola, Gossman, Bradish. It's probably Zach Gallen.
It is Zach Gallen.
Yeah, I got you.
The innings totals from last year, like early in the season, you're like, oh well, the velocity's down. Maybe it's he threw just so many innings last year, including the playoffs. And then he kind of like righted the ship a little bit, but he hasn't really looked crisp to me. And then if you just go into like all the amazing stats you have on PitcherList in terms of just like how hard he's getting, the four seam is getting hit.
It's unreal.
The fact that
56% ICR on a pitch you throw 50% of the time. His striker, that is strike minus ICR rate for Zach Gallen's four seamer, was around like 54% last year. It's always been around there. It's 43% this year, which is 13th percentile. No, that can't happen.
Right. And we talked about, like, Kevin Gausman is also in this tier. We talked about how his four seam gets hit really hard, and that has led to, like, high whips and things like that. But Gausman has continued to have, like, the splitter that he can rely on and say, okay, yes, I'm essentially a two pitch pitcher, and one of those pitches gets hit pretty hard, but my other pitch is super elite and it can carry me a little bit. And Gowan, you know, we talked coming into the year that if you looked at his ICR rates on his individual pitches, they were all pretty high last year, but he had a deep arsenal of pitches. And so it didn't really matter that he maybe gave up harder contact than you would have liked to see from your ace. But now the ICR rates are going way up on the four seam, and the other pitches just haven't been there to bail him out. I know, like, we don't tend to give a lot of, like, fantasy sort of advice on the show in terms of, like, what you would do, but, like, is there a silver lining for you? Or if you had a good enough opportunity to get out of the Zach Gallen business, are you trying to get out of the Zach Gallen business?
So the best thing I can tell you is that his curveball has been as good as I've seen it, because this is a pitch that he needs to get more out of and to keep guys off of the four seamer as much as possible. And its O swing is above 50%, which is 99th percentile of all curveballs. And he's throwing more of them. 26%.
But the zone rate is
isn't it? Is first percentile.
Right.
25%. So, like, however, strike rate is up from 59% last year to 65% because guys are just chasing endlessly.
Right.
And that's great when you have this pitch returning its highest ever swing strike rate and also an ICR that's at 33%. Right. So the combination of those two things, well, that's not so bad. How long is that going to last? That is an extreme for Gallen at the moment. Meanwhile, the changeup and the slider are not the pitches that you want them to be. And then really he's becoming almost that two pitch pitcher Gallen is. And it's a little bit scary right now, especially with that four seamer being what, you know, we know it, how hard it gets hit. So it is very precarious right now. And I actually, as I was doing the list, I had Gallen higher. And then I said, no, I'm going to bring this down a bit more, looking more into Gallen. But here's the thing. He's still producing, right? It's a 3.12 ERA, 1.13 whip, 26% carry. Like, everything looks in line as far as the bottom line of results go. It's just looking weird and, I don't know, and scary.
It is scary to me, for sure.
Yeah, it's like it's like in Severance where they're looking at the numbers and, like, these are scary.
Yeah, except in Severance, I don't see what's scary, but this, I see what's scary. Tier number three starts with number 21, Grayson Rodriguez. Number 22, Paul Skeens. Number 23, Pablo Lopez.
Yeah, I know. We'll get there.
Number 24, Ranger Suarez. Number 25, Garrett Crochet. Number 26, Dylan Cease. Number 27, George Kirby. Number 28, Framber Valdez. Number 29, Mackenzie Gore. Number 30, Justin Steele. Number 31, Jack Flaherty. Number 32, Tanner Houck. Number 33, Ronel Blanco. What's this tier called? Why is it called that?
This one is chicken parmesan. I don't think you've really ordered, like, a chicken parmesan in a place and it's been really bad. It can be, though. And there are times like, why did I get this chicken parmesan?
Isn't it more after the fact? It's like not bad. And then afterwards you're like, I feel terrible.
Yeah, right. But the thing is, you know, I've talked to some people. This is actually one for Chris Webber. It's always good is what they would say. Or their fiance would say, or sorry, rather their wife would say that. Chicken parmesan, that's this. And it's not like, it's not that ace meal, you know, it's not that one that's just, oh man, God, I gotta have it. But it's always like, okay, chicken parmesan, you're not gonna screw that up. Here we go.
Yeah, love it. Speaking of not screwing things up, we do have to talk about the downward, not full trajectory, but just the downward streak, I guess we could say, that Pablo Lopez has been on. Last week we talked about how the changeup wasn't really there for him. And we were still holding out hope. Obviously there's a big shift in your rankings now. He's down 17 spots. The last start obviously wasn't great. But what has prompted you to kind of lose some of that optimism that you were feeling last week?
Yeah, I mean, it's really the changeup and sweeper have both not been there. And for Pablo Lopez to say, hey, the changeup is always there in December, and then to see it just get, I don't know, be less consistent, fewer strikes this year, lower swing strike rate overall, not as many chases, etc. It's really disheartening, honestly. And only 19% usage. Sure, this was 21% last year, but 32 in previous years, and still really effective. And to see the sweeper that stole a lot of that usage to get hit around as much as it has, 42% ICR is really bad, with 28% ICR the previous year. That's really the bigger issue. And of course, there's home runs. The home run rate is up to 165 per nine. Whenever you see a guy with like a good whip, which honestly, given everything I'm saying, 117 is kind of in line for Pablo Lopez, but the 5.25 ERA is not. That's because he hasn't been a home run guy in the past, and all of a sudden right now it is, with a terrible left on base rate as well. So it's really just about how do you have more opportunities in your arsenal to prevent guys from, you know, crushing a single pitch, right? And what has happened with Pablo Lopez is the changeup or sweeper or curve or sinker, whatever it is, was always there to help out with the fastball. The fastball already has allowed 5 home runs, but the sweeper's already allowed as many home runs as it did last year. 3 home runs this year, 3 home runs last year, and 3 times the pitches in 2023. So that's a huge deal for him at the moment. It is a little bit of sample size, you could say, because home runs are, you know, it's not that many that he's allowed in total across all of his pitches. I mean, so far it's, I believe it's 11 home runs. And let's say that were 8 home runs or so, then all of a sudden the ERA is closer to like 3.7 or something ridiculous like that, right? So that should get corrected over time. I'm not seeing a guy that's comfortable. I'm not seeing someone who's just right now. I know exactly what to throw in that spot. I'm going to do that. That's what we've seen a ton from Pablo Lopez in the past. So I think it's going to be there at some point. I also have to wonder if there's something else underlying that's affecting his sweeper and or changeup that we don't really know about. I don't want to think that. I regret not moving Pablo Lopez down further last week as a preemptive. And then he had two starts in the past week since his update that he just could not come around from. So I had to do the massive drop because he didn't deserve the Aces Gonna Ace tag anymore. And I believe he can get back to it. And I don't have him underneath other guys who are obviously killing it, because I do think from this point moving on, he will not have a 5.25 ERA, right? And he still had a 28% strikeout rate. And that seems in line, 4% walk rate. So he should be much better, but Pablo Lopez is going through a very hard time at the moment.
Yeah. Talk to me about the pitcher ranked right underneath him, because I think this is a little bit of like a good discussion of pitcher we really trusted who's struggling versus pitcher who we didn't have high expectations for who's thriving. You seem to have even just, and I would agree, a sliver more confidence in Pablo Lopez than Ranger Suarez. Why might that be? Why is Suarez down at 24 or at 24?
Right. It actually makes a lot of sense. I'll explain it after this break.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
No, it's pretty straightforward. Ranger Suarez versus Pablo Lopez. I mean, obviously, Ranger Suarez has done all the things to make us fall in love with him at the beginning of the year. 1.75 ERA, 0.82 whip, 28% carry. Actually, the last three, he allowed 4 runs. Oh, no, but he also had 9 strikeouts. He's actually had his 3 highest strikeout games across his last 4 starts. If there's any showcase saying, look, guys, I'm completely fine, and I'm still going to be doing this forever. The main thing with Ranger Suarez is that the changeup is just so dang good right now. 24% swing strike rate. It was a 15% last year. His command overall is really, really precise. Watching him pitch, watching just his trajectory this year of how he's handling all of his pitches, and really 5 of them, sinker, 4-seamer, curve, changeup, cutter, all around the zone and using it at the right moments. It's lovely to see. I've also seen it before from Ranger Suarez. You might not remember, but in 2021, he had 12 starts in 39 games of a 1.36 ERA with a 1 whip and 26% K rate. And even when he was a starter, it was pretty much the same exact routine. And that didn't stick around the next year. And we even saw in 2022 that he wasn't good for a while. And then all of a sudden by the end, he did pick it up for about a month and a half. And this is a little different. I think the changeup is better than we've seen in the past. However, it is highly fueled by Ranger Suarez's ability to place all these pitches where he wants to, and he's in that groove. Now, every single week that he continues to do it, it's hard for me not to continue to raise him. I can't just say that I don't care. You're just not that guy and who, whatever. No, I'm consistently raising Ranger Suarez because somehow he just keeps doing it and he deserves to be rewarded for that. Does he have all of the hotel helping him? Yes. 225 BABIP and an 82% left on base rate. Actually, his homer fly ball rate's pretty average, so I'm not even going to give him that one. Hit per nine is at 5.4, which we know is not going to last at the 87th percentile. We don't see, you really just don't see underneath a seven unless you're a true ace. And that will change, and then things will, you know, stabilize a little bit from there. But at the end of the day, Ranger Suarez has pitched in a way that has deserved success. And we don't know if he's going to continue to pitch in a way that deserves success. It's always the hardest thing about what we do is, yes, we look at their recent performance, say, well, that's who he is. No, most of the time, these guys change all the time. We like to lean into the older aces more because we've seen a track record of that is more believable. Ranger Suarez, the track record of him is that he goes through grooves in and out. I'm so happy he has one right now. And I believe as the season goes on, there will be an intersection of Pablo Lopez and Ranger Suarez from the upward and downward trains going through each other. So we'll see how it goes. But I mean, maybe next week Ranger Suarez is about Pablo Lopez just because that's where they're going.
Right.
We'll see.
That's how the week-to-week game goes. just going to vent some frustration on Framber Valdez right now, or just about Framber Valdez, not on him. We would obviously never do that and don't condone anybody doing that. But like we talked about in the preseason or in spring training, like 2022, he brings in the cutter and you're like, oh, that's a pretty good pitch for you. Like it's working. It's not giving up hard contact. You're getting a decent swing and strike rate. Last year, he changes the cutter, makes it slower, sweepier, gets more swinging strikes, but gets hit really hard. This year, he like abandons it altogether. I don't really understand why, like, unless it was a grip issue, which it would surprise me considering how well executed the pitch was, why we took a pitch that worked and then changed it and then removed it. And now, like, he's not only not missing as many bats, but he's getting hit harder. It's just, it's not like all a mess. Like, I don't think that he's some sort of like a fantasy disaster, but I don't understand why we changed from something that was clearly working.
Yeah, I don't know either. It drives me up the wall as well. And this is who he is. He's just going to do this. Okay. He's going to get all the ground balls with a sinker and hope that they find enough gloves. I mean, this year it's a 33% overall ICR on that sinker, so that's pretty cool. 31% on the curveball, right? And the changeup's actually the one that gets hit really hard. 18% ICR so far for that changeup. You don't know. You just don't know. And all you can do is really just keep putting him out there. It's a 132 whip so far. It's obviously not going to be that, I think, for the full year. It's not going to be a 20% carry. He goes up and down. You just let 8 earned runs. And it's one of those things of like, well, that stunk, and we move on.
Yeah.
You know, and that's just kind of how it is.
Just a quick note, a good example of why you don't box score scout is last week's Justin Steele outing, where the first 6 innings looked pretty good against the Braves.
Oh, yeah, so good.
And then the last inning was a disaster, where I think they just pushed him too far, and then the box score looked terrible. Obviously, he looked great tonight against the Brewers, so cool that, you know, that worked out for him, because it was a good example of like he actually pitched better last week than the stats would indicate. But the last one guy I want to talk about in this tier is Mackenzie Gore in this tier with these names might surprise some people. He is still, as of my Sunday waiver wire piece on NBC Sports, was just 49% rostered in Yahoo formats. People are kind of treating him like a streamer where he's getting picked up when he has good starts and then getting dropped. Which I don't fully understand, because not only is he a guy who has prospect pedigree, which we always tend to like in fantasy, right? We gobble up players off the waiver wire who are like the shiny toy. And this guy was one of those and is still like 24 years old. Like, it's not like he's, you know, a 29-year-old like trying to find it again. and he's been really good this year. So I don't really understand why people aren't like believing what he's selling.
Yeah. Mackenzie Gore has allowed two games above 200 runs this year, and they were both 300 runs. It's kind of wild. He has a 28% strikeout rate. Mackenzie Gore's 27th best swing strike rate. His four seamer has taken a massive leap forward. Has a ton of IVB, increased velocity to 96, 97 as opposed to 95 from last year. He has elite extension, and he also has a flat four seamer. Like, it's made to dominate upstairs, and that's pretty much what it does. But really, the biggest concern that I've had about Gore is twofold, really, two of them. One is the secondaries. Are they going to come through enough? Mm-hmm. And they have so far. I mean, the changeup has a good solid strike rate and low ICR. All three, actually, secondaries have a sub 40% ICR thus far. And really, it's a slider that is this nice cut action at 91, 92. But it's only a 56% strike rate at the moment. And that's really the one thing I'm like, oh, if that does really take that next step, that can be such a devastating offering. But Mackenzie Gore, can you also have a team behind you that will get you some wins? I don't know. He's 3-4 right now, and has been in the past of using the four-seamer down too often. And I'm glad to see that he's at least above 50%. He's at 51% high lock, but it was just 49 to 50% last year and not as much of a leap forward as I wanted it to be. Still, I feel like there is a larger emphasis this year. I like to think that Sean Doolittle is helping Mackenzie Gore. And maybe the ding against him in the Nationals is unwarranted. I also want to mention that his whip is terrible. It's 129. That's probably the biggest reason why people are staying away. But it's because his hit per nine is near nine. He doesn't walk, guys. And I honestly just think it's some bad luck on his end. The 341 BABIP that we don't really see as being normal. His hit luck is plus 14. And that's without a sweeper. Normally sweepers and the ones that kind of PLV misses when it comes to this hit luck stuff. No, on all of his pitches, they're just like, yeah, you probably just have a bad defense behind you right now. Or just have bad fortune with what's behind you at the moment. So I think that should get much better for Mackenzie Gore. And actually, you know, I saw on Reddit that people were thinking like, why are you going after Mackenzie Gore? Like, would I drop Darvish or would I drop this other guy? I'm like, kind of. I mean, Mackenzie Gore had also had a brutal schedule. Phillies, Astros, Dodgers, Texas, Jays at Fenway, Phillies. Are you kidding me? And then you got Seattle. What do you do against Seattle? Seven innings, four hits, one earned run, one walk, eight strikeouts. Like, yep, he's an ace. I truly think that next year Mackenzie Gore is going to be treated like an ace. And we see it come out when he isn't essentially up against the wall. Yeah. And he's survived. And that's the coolest part too, is he survived through all of this. Now he's going to get an easier schedule too. I'm just really excited about what we see moving forward for Mackenzie Gore with just a little bit more luck.
Yeah, and there are guys we'll talk about in the next few tiers that I think would be an easy drop who are rostered in way more leagues than Mackenzie Gore.
Absolutely.
We'll start with tier number four. It's number 34, Yusei Kikuchi. Number 35, Jesus Luzardo. Number 36, Bailey Ober. Number 37, Yu Darvish. Number 38, Nick Pivetta. Number 39, Cutter Crawford. Number 40, Brian Wu. What's the tier called? Why is it called that?
This is the Bolognese.
Okay.
Bolognese always good stuff. It's just always good stuff, you know? And it's always going to be there for you. There's going to be something else on the menu that's going to be like more legit most of the time. But you know what? Just want Bolognese? Go have a Bolognese. Have a good time.
Which is the Bolognese in this tier that you would really kind of like gravitate towards?
Who is my favorite pitcher in this one? Yeah. I want to say it's Brian Wu.
Okay.
But I mean, I feel like I need to see more first. The last start he just had was six innings, three and runs, and one strikeout. How am I supposed to butter my bread with this? Because he wasn't elevating as effectively, and the secondaries haven't come through yet. But this really is a tier of just a lot of questions of guys that I want to be in tier three, but they have some concerns. Yusei Kikuchi just threw both him and Luzardo had depreciated velocity by a significant amount. Yeah.
Do last start. Do you think you're a pitcher? Like, I have to imagine the random 11:30 a.m. start.
Yeah, that's what they were saying, especially with Kikuchi, who said like he needs 14 hours of sleep.
Right.
Or something.
Kikuchi is a very particular breed in terms of his routine and like getting things the way he wants it. Like, obviously we'll know in the next start, but
just push him.
Yeah, that's also a very good question. right? You have a guy who is very particular about his routine. Why would you pitch him in the 11:30 a.m. game?
I don't know.
It doesn't make a lot
of sense. It's Giolito all over again. You have Jesus Luzardo, who also had lower velocity, but he said he was focusing on command more, which is, let's see, okay. I've heard that one before, but fine. Bailey Ober, honestly, Bailey Ober has his minus 13 on it, and really it's not. I even said in the notes, I was like, guys, don't worry about this minus 13. It's a case of so many guys I feel are actually showcasing the ace potential, like the Tanner Houck and Flaherty and Gore and Grochet and Ranger Suarez had to come up and so on and so forth. And also, yeah, Bailey Ober is an ace potential. He is the definition of a Holly. It's why we call it the Bailey special. He's not someone that's going to go like 7 innings, 10 Ks, one and run, like with any sort of, you know, hope on a given night. It's like, no, I hope to get like 6 innings of production. Great, thanks.
He is the Bolognese.
Right, he is the Bolognese. He's the one. Yu Darvish just allowed a ton of home runs to the Yankees. It's more of what we've seen before after 4 games of 0 runs. I'm like, yeah, I think that like the four game streak was nice, but Darvish still has just been known as more of a turmoil cherry bomb kind of guy, and it kind of makes sense. Nick Pivetta stumbled a ton, showcasing the command that we saw before the second of last year, and that made me worried. And Carter Crawford, I've expressed my concerns with him for a bit, where he always feels like he's overperforming and getting to the finish line with his lovely number while not really looking like the kind of stud that deserves it and dominates it, you know?
Right.
So all of these guys, I'm like, yeah, there's something to prove with all of them.
Quick question about the Brian Wu thing. The Lance Brozowski put out a good article today. It was a nice piece on Wu succeeding versus lefties, but one of the things he pointed out was that he's throwing more sinkers inside to lefties.
Yep.
This year, that feels odd to me.
Yep.
Like, you know, obviously you're a right-handed pitcher, your sinker is going to come back over the plate. You know, there might be something to throwing like backdoor sinkers that start off the plate and then, you know, hit the outside corner to like a righty. But the idea to me of throwing inside sinkers to lefties feels like maybe a long-term recipe for disaster. Like maybe not disaster, but I can't see that working long-term. But am I missing something?
Well, I mean, we actually don't have it defined that way. We have it pretty much the same glove side location. We just have a lot of the arm side ones that are missing middle instead.
Interesting.
So it's closer to inside, but they're just landing middle location, yeah, as opposed to inside.
So Lance used a heat map on it, which would make sense that if it's an
right,
arm so the side
heat map would be more toward inside, but it's just missing middle. Yeah, I don't know if that's intentional or not. And the success that Brian Wu is having against lefties does seem unsustainable. Right. 80% strike rate, 33% called strike rate, 30% ICR. It doesn't quite seem right at the moment. It's not a very large sample, though. And also as it is with sinkers right now, he's only throwing them 22% while it's 50% four-seamer, so it's a different look. It's harder. When you combine four-seamers and sinkers effectively, you're able to disguise a lot better, right? And I think a lot of these pitchers on the Mariners have noticed that. Like Robbie Ray is a good example of just, hey, I introduced a sinker and it just helped even staying away from opposite-handed batters. We've seen that a bit. Barrios did that a bit. I actually seen Gausman do it a little bit too recently, which is kind of wild. But I don't really think that that's going to hold. And I think truly for Wu, look, get your four-seamer upstairs and figure out some secondary that's like actually good, please.
Right.
He's it's so a little, close, but it's not quite
It's a
there.
Little bit of the Tanner Houck thing, who's in the tier above, but just like you don't have to dominate the lefties. Just find a way to not get hurt by the lefties. And then if you keep dominating the righties, then it all washes fine. Out.
The splitter really has come alive for Houck this year, though, to lefties, 100%.
We got a small tier for tier number 5. It starts with number 41, Luis Gil, number 42, Walker Buehler, number 43, Hunter Green, number 44, Ryan Pepiot. What's this tier called? Why is it called that?
This would be the tiramisu. My mom would always order a tiramisu just to see what it's like, because she's just always searching for like the really, really good tiramisu. And at the end of the day, it's never going to be bad tiramisu. It's just you just really, really hope that it's like the best tiramisu.
Yeah, I'm not a... My wife is a tiramisu person. It's fine.
Yeah, you know, it's fine. It's too light.
Yeah. I want to talk to you about Hunter Green real quick. Chris Towers and I were chatting on Twitter where he was wondering why people weren't more in on the breakout of Hunter Green.
Oh, interesting.
And the fact that, you know, he is a young pitcher with, again, that prospect pedigree. And we keep kind of going gaga over, you know, guys like Skeens and Jared Jones and whatever. And again, these aren't names he used, but just the idea of we go gaga over these young pitchers who explode on the scene. But we're not really talking about a guy who's still only 24 years old, who's taken another step. And I kind of, I mean, my hesitation, and I agree, like where you have Hunter Green ranked, like to me, he's a late 30s, early 40s type of guy, because he still is essentially a two pitch pitcher. Those other pitches he claimed he was bringing in the offseason, he's not really throwing.
No.
Yes, the fastball is better this year, and that's important, right? Because he was a two pitch pitcher, but the fastball got hit hard. Yep. And so now the fastball is not getting hit as hard. And the slider then can, you know, continues to do damage. But to me, that's still, you're still talking about a two pitch guy in a bad home park who for years has talked about bringing in new pitches and hasn't really done it. And so I think there's risk in that, where it's like, there's nothing wrong with him. I mean, you're putting him, you know, around the 40th starting pitcher. He's not bad, but I just don't know that I'm like, oh my God, this is a low threes ERA. Like, we're seeing the breakout.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you in the sense that I don't really know if I can trust that Hunter Green is now that much different with his command. I will mention he is getting more vert in his four-seamer, that is two extra inches of break. And really, when you look at Hunter Green's fastball, and you don't really see that much difference. It's pretty much the same velocity. It's pretty much the same locations. He does get a little bit more of the zone than he did last year. He's getting a few more strikes. But the batting average is way down, and the home run fly ball rate is cut by 67%. And you got to think, like, hold on a second. What is that? How is that happening? And what's actually very interesting to me, I'm saying he's getting more vert, but he's just cutting back on fly balls. He's allowed fewer of them in fewer line drives for more grounders. And that just doesn't add up, come to think of it, because when you have a dramatic drop in BABIP, generally what that means is you induce more pop-ups, especially for a four-seamer guy with more vert. Means those fly balls that were going at a launch angle of like 25 to 30 are now going more to 30 to 40, and thus you're getting these outs, and that's bad contact, and that's great. Nope, you're just getting more grounders. And you have the same number of flares and burners, which means that those are softer grounders. And that's, I guess, cool. Less solid contact, 14% solid contact last year, just 5.5%. Sweet spot contact is down. They're struggling more to barrel this four-seamer. And that's a huge deal. It could be the vert. It could be other elements of it. Maybe just as simple as, hey, I'm putting it in a different spot so you can't key into it as you used to. I'm not exactly sure, but we are seeing a much better performing four-seamer, which then does justify the fact that he does have fewer home runs. Now, is he going to all of a sudden be a 0.56 homer of 9 guy? No. And that's going to be the issue, is as a 306 earned run ERA right now, it's probably going to be like a 3.6, 3.7 by the end of this. And that's still good.
Yes.
But he's not going to be, I don't think, a 30% ICR guy. That's really the end of the day. Like, there is still going to be some volatility with Hunter Green, but at least I'm at a point that, like, in the preseason, I said, I am ranking him so low because I just don't want to deal with this hipster. Headache inducing pitcher, stifling the entire roster. I'm out. I won't know if it's real or not. I can't believe any of this. I am pretty shocked that we've seen such an improvement from the four seamer results that I can now say, okay, I'm willing to believe that this is going to be more beneficial than not. However, we could easily just see like a couple games from Hunter Green where it's just terrible. And I go, oh, never mind. So we're, you know, when it comes to like Paul Skeens and Jared Jones, I don't think they have that same floor. I think those guys have more legitimate pitches. Velocity is not all created equal. They are more legitimate, more complete command pitchers too than what Hunter Green is.
Yeah. We're going to get into tier six, but we're going to do that after this break.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Tier 6 starts with number 45, Seth Lugo. Number 46, Carlos Rodon. Number 47, Nestor Cortez. Number 48, the Yankee trio, Clark Schmidt. Number 49, Joe Musgrove. Number 50, Reese Olsen. Number 51, Reynaldo Lopez. Number 52, Justin Verlander. Number 53, Marcus Stroman. Number 54, Jordan Hicks. What's this tier called and why is it called that?
This one is the bread. And the thing is, it should always be there for you. If you have to order it, it's already bad. Like, come on. Guys, you go to a restaurant and you should be getting bread, okay? You should be just given the bread. There's a lot of variety in it, and the day is still bread. But you can tell if it's a good restaurant by the quality of the bread. And these guys are going to just, they're going to feed you. They're going to feed you.
I think I'd like Joe Musgrove of this group to be feeding me. On my fantasy team, not necessarily like actually feeding
me. Just went 5.1 innings against the Yankees.
But that's what I was going to say. I think he's turning a corner a little bit. You and I talked before the IL stint that like it just seemed like he wasn't crisp per se, but it wasn't like there were any glaring red flags. We felt like he would probably right the ship to a certain extent. Do you feel like we're seeing that kind of like slow march back to being the old reliable pitcher that we thought he could be?
Yeah, pitch separation was really good. For Joe Musgrove in that game against the Yankees. So it was 5.1 innings of one and run, 5 Ks, 0 walks, and 6 hits. Four seamers were generally upstairs. Sliders were down in glove side a ton. Curveballs were there too. It felt a lot more like Musgrove had a plan and was able to execute it a lot more. I still have some worry about the bite and the aggressiveness of everything that he does. I mean, I think about classic Joe Musgrove sliders and I think about like near 20% swing strike rates. We've seen this year 13%. And the curveball being a little bit more of that CSW pitch, he's not getting the same called strikes he used to, only 12% this year as opposed to like 22 of last year and years before. So there's still room to grow. And even in this game, it wasn't the most overwhelming. However, high CSW marks on slider, curveball, and cutter in this are just really nice to see, honestly. And still, yeah, 3/24 slider whiffs is not quite where we want to be. Still getting strikes with those, good locations, Papa John's.
Papa John's. Let's talk about Clark Schmidt, pitcher ranked one spot above him. To me, this seems like a perfect example of something that you and Eno alluded to on an episode of The Craft that I kind of piggybacked on in a tweet that I did. I looked at the pitchers I wrote up last year having thrown new pitches and the idea that sometimes, as we've talked about, it might take a year for a new pitch to really click. And it seems like that's what's happening with Clark Schmidt's cutter, which flashed at times last year, but was not a consistent offering. But we kept saying it's a crucial pitch for him against lefties. Like if he could get this thing working, and a year in now, it seems like he's getting that pitch working a little bit.
Yeah, no, the cutter has really shown up lately for Clark Schmidt. And it's about dang time, you know? I would see these games early in the year with Clark Schmidt's cutter where it's just like, oh, it's not quite there yet. We're not doing it. And recently we're starting to see more swing strikes on it. Actually, the last four games against lefties, Clark Schmidt's cutter, which had never, which had previously not had above a 20% swing strike rate, say for the first game of the year. Last four of them have all been above 20% swing strikes against lefties. And that's huge. That's really everything that you want to see for that cutter. I believe he had 10 whiffs in that last game alone on that cutter. And if Clark Schmidt can take down lefties, it's like we were talking about with Hauk. If he's fine against lefties, he's got all the tools he needs against righties. Not to mention Clark Schmidt, even though he's lost the last two games unjustifiably, he has already 5 wins for the Yankees. And you have to think he's just going to continue to collect those wins throughout the year. Getting wins is not something I really like to talk about a ton because I think a lot of it is just pure luck. or it's obviously this isn't pure luck, but there's a lot of times where it's just so it shifts the player rater at the end of the year so unfairly, right. Where you just could not know who's going to get those winnings and who wasn't. But you can look at a guy and say, look, do you have good ratios? Are you hurting me? And the answer is no. Then say, great, wins. This is awesome. I'm going to chase those wins while you're not hurting me as much as I possibly can. And also 27% strikeout rate might surprise you for Clark Schmidt right now. It's only surprised me just looking at the moment. 25%. I don't remember. But he's great. 2.52 ERA. That's what the number was. Oh, yeah. My gosh. Just had a brain fart. 2.52 ERA, the 114 whip as well. Clark Schmidt is just in this wonderful groove at the moment. And really looking at everything, it's not like something is massively sticking. Obviously, the left on base rate, 84%. Fine. He's not going to be a 2.52 ERA. But what we've been hoping for is like a 3.5 for the year. And with his improved cutter, he still has a really good sweeper, curve, change, sinker, all that stuff. Yeah, this is good. You want this on your team.
Yeah. Any other guys in this tier you want to talk about? There are some guys who moved up a lot. I mean, Justin Verlander, Marcus Stroman, Jordan Hicks. Anything you want to mention with those guys?
You know, it's kind of funny. I think at Ronaldo Lopez, right at 50, between Reese Olson and Ronaldo Lopez, there's kind of a divide of... I wanted to almost split up this tier. And because like Ronaldo and Verlander, Stroman, and Hicks, I feel are a little bit below Lugo, Rodon, Cortez, Schmidt, Musgrove, Olson. By the way, also Lugo, I know y'all want me to put him up higher, but this isn't going to last. This can't. This is so ridiculous what Seth Lugo is doing right now. He has a 90% left on base rate. He's cut his home run by fly ball rate in half. He's not this ridiculous strikeout guy. You want to know how I know that? Because he had 12 strikeouts, 10 strikeouts, and 3 strikeouts. Like, this isn't him. But Paul Skeens did that. He's not Paul Skeens.
Are you sure?
It's wild. And the teams that he got a lot of strikeouts against, 9 against the Tigers, 12 against the Angels, 10 against the Athletics. You know, he's just not that guy. And it's really awesome that it's happened. But I just don't believe. That's it. I'm sorry. I'm being the anti-Ted Lasso for a moment. I just don't believe.
Sometimes that's okay. Sometimes you gotta not believe in certain things. a little skepticism is healthy. Mm. We got some skepticism of some of these guys in tier 7. Starts number 55, Tanner Bibee. Number 56, Michael King. Number 57, Bryce Miller. Number 58, Taj Bradley. Number 59, Nick Lodolo, back from the IL today. Number 60, Christian Scott. And number 61, Blake Snell. What's this tier called? Why is it called that?
So, by the way, I meant to throw this out there. Put away rate for Seth Lugo's curveballs, 33% right now. It was 16% last year and 20% before that. MLB average of 17%. There's no way that's holding. There's just no way. Okay. Anyway, this tier, this lovely tier. This would be... I had something good for this one. This would be the house salad.
Okay.
Because you feel like, you know, house salad, that's going to be good. It's going to, you know, it's a nice balance with everything. But house salads, you just don't know, man. Some of those are just like, what do we got? We just throw those things in on a plate and there it is, house salad. It's just, this is an atrocity. Sometimes the house salad's like legit. So you don't know what you're going to get. It's cherry bomb.
As a kid, my barometer was always, does it have cheese and croutons in it? Because then it's a banging house salad. And if it didn't, then I hated it. You could tell that I was somebody who loved a salad bar too. That was just primo. That's it. Growing up in the city, you didn't have many places that had salad bars.
So no.
Out, no, you get one out in Long Island. You get one out in Long Island. You're like, oh yeah, give me the little baby corn. Give me the cheese and the croutons. Let's do it. There's nothing healthy on this salad.
Never.
Let's talk about Tanner Bibee's fastball.
Sure.
Because I read in your notes that he increased his IVB on the pitch by 2 inches across the last 4 games. And that's interesting because we talked before that he's kind of like a poor fastball guy.
Right.
So even a minute improvement in that pitch can raise the floor a little bit for him. So what are you seeing and how interesting is that to you?
You know, I got to give a huge shout out to Renee Deckert. Renee, if you guys don't know her, she does fantastic articles here at Pitcherless. She also works at Purple Row with the Colorado Rockies. And every so often, she's able to talk to some pitchers and ask some really interesting questions. And she got a chance to talk to Tanner Bibee today, and she sent it along to me. And you should definitely check out the longer thing because there's so much that Bibee said, and it's great. But one thing that he was talking about was kind of changing his arm angle, because I saw this. I saw that he was normally a 0.4 high-adjusted VAA guy, and all of a sudden the last start was a 0.7. And that's a huge change. So I was so curious about it. I was saying, yeah, he changed it a little bit, and it felt kind of cool, and he's all right with it. And it's kind of nuts. I looked over the last four starts. I posted this on Twitter. He went from a 0.4 to a 0.7, which, again, is still steep. Like a 1 is a normal, just neutral, in my view. 0.7 is what AJ Puck and DL Hall kind of fell to. So not great still. However, that's better than what it was before. If you locate it well, which Bibee did in that 13 whiff start with his four-seamer, mm-hmm. and increase its IVB from like 14.5, which is bad, to 16.5. Whoa, okay, hold on a second. Maybe actually this is not such a bad four-seamer after all. Like, it's still not exceptional because you want it to be not steep up there. But if you're getting 16.5 IVB at like 95 in decent extension, like, okay, that can work if you locate it perfectly, right? So that's kind of cool. Now, there's still stuff to be said about the consistency of the slider and the changeup.
Yes.
However, the major concerns I've had, which is how steep it's been, and you're wondering, how does this really affect it, Nick? Essentially, the steeper it gets, the better it is for a hitter, unless you get past a certain threshold. But they just can make more contact with it along their swing of the bat. And you don't want that. Shocking, more at 11. If you want whiffs, you don't want more ability for the hitter to make contact. So to limit that a little bit and also get more vert is why all of a sudden you had that 13 whiff game out of nowhere on that four seamer. And just keep in mind after that, which is such a massive boost, it's a 10% overall swing strike rate for the four seamer. So that was clearly like a 7% or something, 8% swing strike rate four seamer before that game, right? So that's a huge deal with Tanner Bibee. I don't know if this is going to stick around. I also don't know how good the slider and changeup are going to be because those have both been lacking at times this year as well. The command issues that had me a little bit spooked in the preseason are still kind of there. Mm-hmm. And it's still a work in progress, but at least now we're getting closer to a, hey, look, I've done the thing that is going to fix one of my bigger weaknesses.
Yeah. So you got to take one problem at a time or one issue at a time to fix. Anybody else in this tier you feel like talking about? Michael King, pretty decent tonight as well. Down 9 spots. Bryce Miller dropped a little bit. Secondaries aren't consistent. Anybody else you feel like you need to weigh in on?
Yeah, King dropped. I actually didn't realize that he really dropped. I mean, I was considering him a Holly before, but before this start against the Marlins too, he just showcased himself being a cherry bomb. I even said inside of the notes, hey, he might be back up in the next one because I actually don't think of him as a cherry bomb. I think of him as a Holly. However, I need to be able to see that he can consistently do this more than just one start. So fine. Some might be surprised at the massive drop at Bryce Miller, but let's be honest, he just has a fastball and it's still driving me up the wall. I need to see a little bit more from his secondaries. I trust Wu more, and I think there's better command overall from Wu than Bryce Miller. Taj Bradley's not getting the boost yet because he's watch a game of Taj Bradley. Just watch the video I put out on him. You'll see it. You'll just see just like this. He doesn't know where this is going, and that rarely ends well. Do what you want with Blake Snell. We know he's not this guy for the entire season. But when? I don't know. If you want to treat him like a stash play, you can do that if you want. But it's so frustrating.
It is frustrating watching Blake Snell pitch right now. Tier number 8 starts at number 62, Jose Berrios. Number 63, Brian Baio. Number 64, Chris Bassett. Number 65, Christopher Sanchez. Number 66, Jose Soriano. What's this tier called? Why is it called that?
This one is going to be the soup of the day. It's pretty boring. It's they always have one though. You know, if you get the soup of the day, you're never like stoked. It's usually just like chicken noodle. Sometimes it's cream of broccoli. You know,
I do love a cream of broccoli though.
You know, that's the thing. My friend would actually always call. We would always call donuts. This was the Seventh Avenue Diner. It's the place that I went to so much of my life. and we would place an order for delivery, and he would always ask, "What's the soup of the day?" "Nah, I'm good, thanks." Every time. He would never order it, but hoping it would be cream of broccoli. It never was.
Really?
Never got it.
You know, I'm always going to be like, you always have to call me like, what's the soup du jour? What's the soup of the day?
Oh, it's never cream of broccoli.
I'll have that.
Yeah, and I'm so sorry. But yeah, this is the soup of the day.
I would order what Jose Soriano is selling on the soup of the day.
You're in here.
I'm in. I mean, to a
degree.
I'm into the extent that I could see holding him on your roster and playing him in the right matchups and not throwing him back onto the waiver wire. But I'm not in like this is a legitimate breakout that we're witnessing. I'm intrigued by the fact that he's dialing back on the usage of the four seamer and leaning into the sinker more, which I covered last week in my mixing it up column on NBC Sports, where I look at pitch mix changes. That like he's throwing but prior to the last start, he was throwing the four seam fastball just 12% of the time in May. But he had thrown it like 27% of the time in April. He was also throwing it a lot more to righties. Now he's throwing the sinker more to righties as well. PLV supports obviously the switch to the sinker over the four seamer. The four seamer doesn't miss bats. It doesn't have a good put away rate. He also doesn't really command it as well as the sinker in terms of both zone rate and strike rate. So it's just like everything about moving away from the four-seamer made sense to me. And so I don't think that it is a surprise that his May has been much better than his April, given the changes that he's making. So yeah, I think the foundation of what he does is a little safer now.
Yeah, it's a 16% swing strike rate on that curveball. It's pretty cool. Sometimes a splitter shows up too. 10% usage on that, but sometimes we get some good results on it. 63% strike rate overall. 53% ICR rate ain't fun, but sometimes it does help out. Really, for me with Jose Soriano is, are you going to get enough strikes on that sinker? I think of him a lot like Jordan Hicks, where Hicks, I think, has more sustainability with his sinker in the zone. But this is a hard-throwing sinker that has not allowed a home run, has allowed a really bad batting average in BABIP and everything. And it's only minus one hit luck, even though it's a 215 BABIP, because it's just a really, really hard pitch to hit. It's a 531 PLV sinker. I mean, that's crazy, as you were mentioning, right? So you throw it hard in movement and you don't throw it too much in the zone, too much down the middle of the plate. Jose Soriano has a good foundation with that good curveball too. So yeah, I'm generally a fan of it. I'm actually really surprised at how little he is rostered in leagues.
Yeah.
I understand that it is the Angels, only two wins thus far. And yes, it is a 10.5% walk rate, but 3.61 ERA and a 1.18 whip with a 23% K rate. That's pretty awesome. I'm a fan of that. And I think, yeah, he's a solid Toby. The only real problem with Soriano is this could get south pretty quickly. I'm just like, hey, you just lost your sinker and it's gone. In some ways, I thought of making him a cherry bomb at the start of tier 9. I thought of putting him above a tier 8. At the end of the day, I just feel like you have Soriano. You're not really going to expect him to be a 24% K rate guy. It's really closer to like a 20. And you're just going to kind of put up with it and it's just fine. So yeah, Jose Soriano, one of the more underlooked pitchers, I think, right now in 12 teamers.
We got to change that. We'll change more opinions after this break.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Tier 9 starts with number 67, Andrew Abbott. Number 68, Brady Singer. Number 69, Robert Gasser. Number 70, Cal Quantrill. Number 71, Mitch Keller. Number 72, Tyler Anderson. Number 73, Javier Assad. And number 74, Ryan Weathers. What's this tier called? Why is it called that?
Surprise me. You know, you're taking a risk. It's like, you're asking, like, what's your favorite one? They go, oh, I like all this. And you know what? Just surprise me.
Have you ever actually done that?
No.
Yeah.
And I haven't actually picked up and added any of these guys.
Really?
But so
you're not buying into the Cal Quantrill splitter.
I mean, I just can't do it.
I know.
I have them ranked here. Look, I don't have any of these guys on my team. Say for like maybe like Michael Walk as a streamer and stuff. Like, I mean, yes, obviously, guys, I would have some of these as streams. Are like, yeah, what the heck? Why not go for that? But I just can't. I just know it's going to fall out from underneath me. I don't be the one holding it, but it's kind of wild how good that splitter is right now. Right. It really is. Cal Quantrill, my gosh. He's unquantrifiable.
When he was on that really good run for the Guardians too, I was like, there's no way. I wouldn't even consider him. I was like, there's just no shot. There's nothing about this guy that I find interesting. And now it's happening again. And I will say that, look, a sinker splitter mix, you know, is good for Coors. And so if you've got it working, like, I guess if any pitch mix or any pitcher could get it working at Coors, it's that. But it's still like a pitcher I don't have a lot of confidence in who plays his home games at Coors Field. And so, like, sure, like if he gets the Marlins in Coors, okay. But like, I can't see myself like really buying into what's happening.
Yeah, right, he did it against the Phillies though in Coors.
I know. But that's what I'm saying. It's like, I get what he's doing. I can't.
Yeah.
I don't trust him.
I mean, yeah, I'm with you. But you know what? I said I couldn't like 4 weeks ago and he's still doing that. And it's just, all right. Fair. You do you. It's, I mean, have him labeled as a Vargas rule. If you just want a Vargas rule and then just be done after that one, go ahead.
Yeah. Robert Gasser is also confounding to me because when I was writing him up, he was also in my column last week, the Mixing It Up column, where I talked about his cutter because he hadn't used the cutter in the first few starts. And then he brought the cutter in and then he took the cutter back out. And when I was reading all these scouting reports and these prospect reports and a lot of these Brewers sites were, you know, writing articles about him as a prospect too. And it was like, this is a crucial pitch that they developed for him after he got into the organization. Yeah. It's his second most used fastball. It is like essential to his development as a pitcher. And then it's like, okay, where is it? Like, why is it not here? And even in the good start he had tonight, he threw three cutters.
Really?
It's kind of like, you're just kind of like, what is going on?
I could have sworn I saw more than three cutters. But I could be wrong. Maybe it was like misclassified pitches or something like that.
We could check. Maybe I glanced at what happened, what his last start was.
But anyway,
I'll take a look right now. But anyway, it's not the rate.
With Gasser, he just had a fantastic game of spotting sweepers. And that's a cool thing to see. Also, it's a very flat fastball. Well, not very flat, but it's flat enough to have success upstairs. And yeah, that cutter was a tool that should be going in against right-handers and also against as a changeup as well. It was really the major one. So yeah, actually, I could be thinking more of the changeup than the cutter.
No, you're right. It was three last game and eight tonight.
Okay.
So still not like a...
Yeah, no, that sounds about right. Eight is what I was thinking of. So I actually am leading with him tonight for the SP Roundup. Can you guess the... Can you guess the pun?
No, you know the answer to that. You know I've tried.
What would it be for you?
It wouldn't. Let's not derail the show an hour in by me sitting here for 10 minutes trying to think of a pun of Gun Gasser.
So I literally just got it submitted by Aaron Polcare. If you guys don't know, Justin Paradis does the SP Roundup images all but two nights. Aaron Polcare does it on Monday nights and Ethan Kaplan on Wednesdays. And I just got it. It's Robert Diesel because he did great. And Gas Diesel. Mm. Okay.
Got it.
You don't seem very entertained.
Everyone else
has already seen it by the time they're listening to this.
Yeah. I get it. Decent.
They're like, oh, okay. Sure. Anyway.
But listen, I'm terrible at those puns, and that's
right, which is why I'm so like...
So I had to be like, oh, okay. Got it.
Yeah, but my point is, why aren't you more amazed then?
I don't know.
Where's the respect? Okay. But anyway, Robert Gasser to me is someone who... I mean, look, you have like Brandon Thought, right? Who has a really good sweeper, but then we don't really like the fastball that much and there's nothing else. And I see Gasser and go, well, hold on a second. Like, aren't you a better version of this? And then you say, no, Nick, because the sweeper goes into right-handers as opposed to away from them, which is the best one. I'm like, oh. Then the cutter is the interesting thing in the changeup. So there's more of a ceiling, I think, for Gasser if it does all work out there. And it's kind of why he's in this cherry bomb tier.
I like that. I appreciate that. Anybody else want to talk about this tier? I know Mitch Keller is a big riser, but anything you need to say?
Yeah, I mean, maybe the Andrew Abbott show works. I don't know. Mitch Keller is commanding well, and when he does that, he's good. I keep getting hate mail from Alex Fast about Tyler Anderson, so fine. Here he shows up at 72 as a Vargas. Well, he's not sending me hate mail, of course not. Javier Assad, right? Probably end of the Vargas will give one more shot, and then Ryan Weathers has three good starts in a row, so maybe that continues to work out.
Maybe it does. Maybe it continues to work out for some of these pitchers in tier 10, starting with number 75, Jordan Montgomery, number 76, Braxton Garrett, number 77, Michael Wacha, number 78, Gavin Stone, number 79, Eric Fetty, number 80, Brandon Pfaadt, number 81, Zach Littell, number 82, Ben Lively, number 83, Luis Severino, number 84, Cole Irvin. What's this tier called? Why is it called that?
Oh, man, this... trying to think of this one exactly. I have like the feel of it. I just gotta this is like the you go into the pub and you're thinking about having this like nice dinner out and everything. And then you realize you just got like the chicken fingers. But the chicken fingers are always good. So I don't even want to say it's the chicken fingers, but it's like the thing of the pub that doesn't feel like it's real food. And you're like, oh, well, that's my dinner now. And you got dinner. Fair. But you didn't get dinner.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what is that? Like a corn dog or something?
All right. Yeah. You're talking about like
mozzarella sticks?
Yeah, like I do love mozzarella sticks.
I know I do.
I was going more
I like these things, but it's not like a full dinner.
Yeah, I was going more with like the stuffed baked potato, but you know, like the baked potato that's like hollowed out with the cheese and the bacon bits and stuff in it. What am I talking about there? Or like jalapeno poppers. You're like,
Yeah, jalapeno poppers. There you go.
People might be surprised to see Luis Severino down here, given that on the surface, obviously you're not upset about a 3.22 ERA and a 1.16 WHIP. The strikeouts haven't really been there, but I guess he's producing. I don't know.
Right. That's how it is with a lot of guys. It's like, well, I guess this is kind of working, but like we don't really believe it. Yeah, that's where it is. I mean, he has a chance for six innings. Fine. Good luck.
Yep. Why Cole Irvin over Prince Albert Suarez?
Oh, I mean, I don't trust that Albert Suarez is going to keep his four seamer velocity. Mm-hmm. He does that all the time. It's kind of hilarious, actually. Steen Kramer is out of the Baltimore rotation. Actually, I should have him inside of the honorable mentions. I don't think I do. But Albert Suarez to me isn't really someone who, as much as I want to believe that he's just going to get all the whiffs with the four-seamer upstairs, he also doesn't have like a dependable set of secondaries either. While Cole Irvin, I'm like, you know what? He ain't so bad. Like, you will get some wins. You are going to get the Rays next. Nice. I think there's just a little bit more stability there.
Fair. Totally fair. Moving on to tier 11. Starts with big tier here. Number 85, Alec Marsh. Number 86, Charlie Morton. Number 87, Matt Waldron. Number 88, Sean Manaea. Number 89, Michael Lorenzen. Number 90, Alec Manoah. Number 91, James Paxton. Number 92, Aaron Civale. Number 93, Andrew Heaney. Number 94, Casey Mize. Number 95, Ty Lohr McGill. Number 96, Griffin Canning. Number 97, Dean Reed Detmers. Number 98, Taewon Walker. Number 99, Kenta Maeda. And number 100. Sorry. There's another zero there. Number 100. Eric Kenny. What's this tier called? Why is it called that?
Oh, man. This is the airplane menu. So, like, you're going to look at this a lot and be like, whatever you order from this sit down place in this airport, okay? It doesn't matter. This is not going to be a memorable meal. This is just as you're passing by and you need something.
And you just hope it doesn't go south on the flight.
Right. And that is the streaming section. This is all the ones that are not supposed to be on your team past this week. It's just supposed to be a moment.
Are you at all interested in Matt Waldron throwing a harder knuckleball? That's like kind of
it is kind of lately. Interesting. That's like three ticks harder, isn't it?
Yeah. It's like kind of working also.
Yeah. It's like 79-80 now. Yeah. Oh, man. And you did well against two really good offense. But at the same time, if you have a good knuckleballer, it doesn't really matter who you face.
Right.
Thing is, the reason why I don't trust a knuckleball is our first ever pitcherless shirt from like 2015 is because you never know if it's going to show up or not.
Yes.
And he does get the Marlins. You go, oh, well, it's the Marlins. Like, yeah, doesn't matter. If it's not a good knuckleball, it's just a meatball.
Yeah.
So you don't know.
You ride knuckleballers while they're pitching well, and then there's going to be a terrible start and you just hop off. You're just done because it won't come back.
Nope.
Speaking of not coming back, saw Eno Saris's tweet last week about Casey Mize's four-seam fastball and how the vertical movement on it has been just decreasing start after start after start. Obviously, the four-seam fastball improvements were a big thing in the spring with, you know, just kind of like why he was intriguing to people after the year off, in addition to just like what we thought it was happening with the splitter and all this sort of stuff. But it has had a pretty major impact on his performance of late. He has not looked good lately.
Yeah. And I can't lean in on Mize if he doesn't have a foundational four-seamer. And it's that simple. It's just not that great right now. And the slider has not really developed into that major pitch. And the splitter is not really carrying it either. The reason we liked Mize was because the four-seamer was elite, we thought. Like, really, like, legitimately good. And when it's not legitimately good, it's like, well, why am I doing this? I'm just going to wait.
Yeah, it's sad, but that's...
Yeah.
That is what's happening, and who knows what they're... You know, he missed a whole year, so who knows what they're going to do with him, the way to limit innings or, you know, send him down or whatever. Any of these other streamers you feel like you want to touch on?
Oh, all of them. No, just keep an eye on what Tyler McGill does. I believe today he did go, and I should know what that...
No, there was a rainout. He was scheduled for today, but they were postponed. So he'll go tomorrow.
Framber Valdez, by the way, 2 innings and 3 in runs and 7 base runners in 2Ks so far.
Man.
And now I you said that thing literally at like 9:36 p.m. and when they go on at 9:40 Eastern time, which I found pretty entertaining. But yeah, that's you know, I think that's the most interesting one in my book. It's just, look, Tyler McGill, if he can actually put things together with location more so than anything else, there is actual promise with this elite extension. So just at least be a note of that. Don't count out Spencer Arrighetti too, of course, with the, you know, good locations on his four seamer and good secondaries around the zone that can work as well. But outside of that, I mean, Charlie Morton just didn't do well tonight again. And it's drives us up the wall, and somehow Taiwan Walker is here and maybe you get some wins. I mean, yeah, these are not the fun things at all.
No, they're not. What is fun is chatting with you, though.
Always.
Every Monday. every Monday, Nick and I are here chopping it up. As always, just if you rate and review this podcast, it does mean a lot to us. It does get people to see this, so it does mean something. Please go ahead and do that. You can follow both of us on Twitter. Nick is obviously at PitcherList. I'm at Samsky NYC. On Wednesday, I have my Mixing It Up column coming out, so you can check that out over on NBC Sports. Nick always has tons of good stuff. The live streams. Who's the next pitching video on?
I don't know yet. Okay. I decide on the fly tomorrow morning. Actually, I mean, looking at last night's or today's games, really, it might be fun to do either a Michael King, a Joe Ryan, a Justin Steele video. One of those would be really fun. But yeah, I'm going to do them next week. So throughout this week. And of course, if you're listening to this now, I might be live 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. Eastern time every single weekday morning, where you can influence who we do cover. So definitely go and show up at playback.tv/pitchless. It's the best time.
It's always nice to have influence.
Always. Nice.
I am Eric Smolsky, the Pelican.
I am Nick Pollock, the Lion.
And I'm going to go call every diner in my neighborhood to see who's got some broccoli and cheddar soup.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Temper Adapt Collection at Ashley, in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.